We were 5 years ago, I think, is a big pioneer, and we take a lot of pride in this partnership with Unilever, where we launched Kenya's first packaging made out of 100% recycled material, 100% locally collected, 100% locally manufactured into a recyclate, and then back into the packaging for the local market.
My name is Patrick Hübscher, and this is Circularity FM, the podcast about understanding, building, and managing circular business models.
Welcome back to Circularity FM and our series on circular entrepreneurship in Kenya. In this episode, we hear from Kieran Smith, co-founder and CEO of Mr. Green Africa, Kenya's first B Corp certified plastic recycler. Kieran shares how they build a fair trade recycling system, working with thousands of informal waste entrepreneurs, the challenges of operating in a largely informal market, and why win-win partnerships are essential to the sustainability of the business model. But before we start, I have an offer for you. If you want to get the actionable one-pager about this conversation, please sign up for the Circularity FM newsletter. You can find it at www.circularity.fm. Welcome, Kieran, to this episode, founder and CEO of Mr. Green Africa. Kieran, who are you and what is Mr. Green Africa?
Good to be here, Patrick. Thanks for having us or me with you today. Well, who I am? I'm Mr. Green co-founder. I'm Kieran, and I'm based in Nairobi, and originally I'm from Switzerland, and when we started Mr. Green, or I moved to Kenya almost now 11 years ago to start Mr. Green Africa. I don't know, do you want me already to go into the details of what Mr. Green Africa does and why we started?
Yeah? Let's do that.
Well, so, you know, we take a lot of pride in when we started. Now, today, we take a lot of pride in when we started this, because at the time when we started and come up with the idea, my co-founder and I, there was not a big discussion around circular economy. There was not a big discussion around plastic pollution and how much of an issue it is for the environment, right? And also, if we go into more niche, there was not a lot of discussion of an informal waste collection sector, right? So when we started Mr. Green Africa, and when I had the privilege to travel to Kenya and see the opportunities, we built Mr. Green Africa on two principles. So the first principle being that we want to create a win-win situation for the informal waste collection sector, and buy in a fair, transparent, inclusive way the plastic waste back as a resource, as a commodity. If you will, we said we can copy what you see in fair trade value chains, in the agricultural value chains, with tea, with coffee, and smallholder farmers. We can apply that into the waste value chain or the plastic waste value chain, where our smallholder farmers are waste entrepreneurs who harvest every day. Yeah, that's principle number one. And then the principle number two was very much focused and geared towards local value addition. Again, with many commodities that we have still today, the commodity doesn't have the highest possible value addition within the country of origin, right? And for us, from day one, it was very clear and important that if we truly want to share value across the value chain, we need to have highest possible value addition in country of origin, where we operate. And hence, the principle number two is local value addition, producing plastic waste from the feedstock into the highest possible value, in our case now, a pellet format. So that's how we started, and why we started Mr. Green Africa. Of course, you know, 11 years ago, I was a bit younger and a bit more naive. But it was one of the best decisions I made in my life to do that.
Well, wonderful. Let's stick to these 11 years. Can you take us a bit back and give us an impression of the, let's say, state of plastics in Kenya back then?
I think a lot of has changed over these 11 years, right? When we went to visit, and what I've seen is that there's a a huge informal sector engaged in collecting. You know, I mean, we have to imagine the streets of Kenya, that there's littering happening, there's this illegal dumping happening, etc. So plastic waste and waste in general is an eyesore. But there are people who have been turning this into an opportunity, where they collect and take out valuable waste streams and sell them into an informal system. So that has already been there. But what has not been there is, an organized way of how this is being done in a more formal way, right? Not to say that this informal system is not organized. They're extremely organized. But they're not formalized, right? Which makes it difficult to actually sell into more formal supply chains where the value sits. And so they depend on middlemen in between to get the value or the lower value. And it's exploitive. It's not transparent. It's very fragmented. Yeah. So that was state of art or state of this situation in Kenya, and still a little bit today. As Mr. Green Africa, obviously we're working and pioneering work to change that. But it's a big endeavor and it takes time. Then if we look at the validation side, at that time, there was no sophisticated recycling company focusing on plastic waste in particular. So there were some companies who would produce end products, bins, buckets, etc., who would interact with this informal system and buy recycled material in a certain way, and they would process it, and they would go into direct end applications. But those are more lower quality or lower end applications, little to non-consumer applications, etc., right? And so where we saw the void, and then maybe from a regulatory perspective, also, there was no regulation around the importance for recycling or incentives for recycling, etc. So those were all things that were not existent 11 years ago. If we fast forward today, regulatory, I think Kenya was one of the pioneers in changing legislation around plastic bags, right? Banning them, I think, in 2017. So which woke up the industry, especially the plastic industry. Oh, the government is serious about this topic, and we need to do something, right? So that has massively shifted. Of course, again, much more room for improvement, much more room for progress. But I think that is a big change in the perception of we need to do something about it rather than just this is what it is. Yeah. Also, from a recycling capacity perspective, especially in plastics, not only us as Mr. Green Africa have started adding capacities and in sophistication level. There's other companies, great companies who are there, right? T3, Takataka Solutions. They're there and they're doing their efforts and their piece and they're contributing. And then, of course, there are a couple of Chinese manufacturers who are more sophisticated in recycling. So the landscape of capacity and players in the space has drastically and significantly improved, right? And also I'm happy to say on the formal system, in the informal system side, there's a lot of movements. We like to call ourselves the pioneer, and we like to take pride and credit for seeing other companies doing similar things as we do in the market. You know, we've always said from day one we want to empower this informal market, make it more transparent, make it more fair, and we've seen now competitors doing the same thing, trying to engage these cohorts, which has not happened before, right? And so that change is happening as well with the focus. And if we even talk about the global scale, what people are now calling it the just transition, where waste entrepreneurs, we like to call them waste entrepreneurs, but the more common term is a waste picker, right? Or informal waste collector. There is an advocacy level for various different organizations. So say there's need to be a just transition when we talk about plastic, circularity, etc. This informal market needs to be part of the solution. They should not be disrupted with the policies that we make, right? And that has also quite evidently changed also in the conversations with government and policymakers in Kenya. So that's what I would say in a nutshell, has really drastically changed. And it's super exciting when we look back over those 11 years when we started and where we are today and the opportunities that are ahead.
Yeah, and especially the change you also brought to the market, yeah, and the inspiration. If we look at the operations of Mr. Green Africa as of today, can you walk us a bit through what you're doing, starting from, let's say, collection to providing the pallets?
So there's three key parts to our business model. As I mentioned, the two principles, which are still at the core of the business, there's three key parts of what we're doing as a business. So the first part, which is a very unique part you don't see in many places, is how we created a decentralized collection aggregation system that integrates this informal sector into our supply chain, right? We're buying, we're registering each and every supplier into our business. We have buyback centers that directly buy from informal collectors, waste entrepreneurs. We register them. We transact with them real time on a proprietary app that we have built for ourselves. So we have full traceability and transparency on who's bringing how much plastic into which location, which type of material, and how much they get paid, right? So it's one key element that we do, though, and we have our reach across Kenya, yeah? The second piece is now where we're in the fourth generation of factory and capacity and recycling capacity setup, right? We started very small with a very small shredder where we just grind down the plastic and sell it back into industries, where we have a 5x capacity compared to last year, where we moved from 4,000 tons capacity, mainly focused on polyolefins, HDP and PP, to now a 20,000 ton annual capacity, focusing on HDP and PP still, and PET food grade, right? So this fourth generation is now, we like to say, our flagship factory that integrates this informal system with a European standard recycling capacity that allows us to produce high quality product at scale, right? And then the third thing that we have been able to build over time, which came along as of the nature of our business, is integrating the supply chain on our value proposition with corporate partnerships and brand owners. We found ourselves right. That in the niche, and in order to, you know, to be really sustainable and transparent and offer a real value proposition for our suppliers, it's all about stability in price. It's all about stability in market foresight, right? If we try to participate with this setup in the high volatile market, spot trade markets on the global scale, it's much harder to do business. Yeah. And where we found ourselves to create a true win-win, which is the third key piece that we've now been doing for the last 5 years, is working with brand owners who make promises to their stakeholders using recycled material in their packaging. Right. And we were 5 years ago, again, I think is a big pioneer, and we take a lot of pride in this partnership with Unilever, where we launched Kenya's first packaging made out of 100% recycled material, 100% locally collected, 100% locally manufactured into a recyclate, and then back into the packaging for the local market, right? So a truly localized, a closed-loop plastics economy, if you will, right? And we've been doing that ever since, and we've been expanding into other brand owners. We're working with Shell, with Total, and we have a couple of other exciting partnerships in the pipeline, right? Why do I say that is a piece of our business? And the third key piece is because that is where the success lies, where we create true value for such customers, right? Because that brand owners are the ideal customer profile to us, because they value transparency, they value traceability, they value the effort of trying to impact the community that supplies into the supply chain. And of course, they value that we can be competitive and benchmark with European qualities, benchmark with European quantities, and of course also competitive in price. So I think that's where we create a true win-win with each other. And so these are the three key pieces of what we do in the core.
Yeah. Yeah. When I was visiting your facilities, I immediately saw this, how do you call it, like this picture or this document where you and back then the CEO of Unilever, Paul Pullman, kind of signed the partnership of bringing exactly that.
Absolutely.
To life.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah.
And you mentioned the fair trade principles and also the wastepreneurs, how you engage with them. What are you doing there? How does it look like in practice?
Yeah, so I think the core is in practice is we enable a market, we enable a steady market, a reliable market, a predictable market, right? And so that is the core, because you know, when we came to Kenya and when we did our research, around this market and who engages with this market. Many NGOs already do it, right? There's many initiatives that do it, etc. But the core failure that we see that have been there from such institutions is they haven't been able to provide a consistent, reliable, transparent market. Yeah. They've been trying to give tools to the cohort to engage with the market. But if there is no consistent, reliable market, no matter what the tools are that you give, they won't last and they won't be effective. And so for us, that was the number one thing, provide a reliable market. And then now on top of that, what we're trying to build is trust, is a relationship, is something that is going beyond just a transaction, right? And in order for us to be doing this successfully, we need to be, the reach needs to be closer to the market, to the sector. So being decentralized, being in these different communities, being active there. And now trying to think about how can we help solve the day-to-day challenges that they face to be productive, to do their job well, etc. Right. And, you know, to be honest, there's a ton of work in progress. After 11 years, you know, I think we've done some great progress, but we cannot claim that we have changed that informal market the way they do their work. They're still exposed to hazardous environment. They're still exposed to harassment by government officials. Mm-hmm. They still have exposure and challenges that they face day to day. So it's a structural and systemic challenge, which we try to still define our space of, like, what is our mandate? How far can we take our mandate to help and support this sector, right? On top of providing a reliable, transparent market, right? And you know, what is viable, right? What is sustainable, right? Because again, you know, we're doing it for profit. We're doing it here as a business. That is the sustainability and the market environment. So there are balances, a very thin line of finding the right balance. And I would argue that we're still figuring out. But the core is exactly what I just said. Stable market and trying to go above and beyond of how we can support and make the productivity of the individual better and ultimately the livelihood better, right? More income, more productivity is it better equals better livelihood. So that's what we're trying to do there.
Yeah. And to add on that, you're a certified B Corp. What
the
you just
first
said,
African recycler with a B Corp certification. We take also a lot of pride in that.
Nice. Yeah, wonderful. Yeah, for a good reason. And let's stick one more question to the, let's say, supply side. I saw the collection stations at Total. I saw the one of the pickup locations at Kibera. I visited Dandora dump site, where, if I understood correctly, you're also collecting feedstock. You mentioned your capacity is about to increase to 10K tons. 20K. So can you give us a rough idea where most of your what's the share of the different input streams, not specific numbers, but to get an idea?
Of course. So, you know, if we also just take a view back on strategically the alignment of Mr. Green Africa, how we collect, right? So we have categories of collection channels, the informal channel and the formal channel, right? So what you've seen on the petrol station in Total is part of the formal channel. And then what you've seen in Kibera and feedstock from the dump sites or the smaller dump sites and the reach of the different collection systems that we have across the country is the formal, the informal channel, right? And so today, 95% is coming from the informal channel, 5% from the formal channel. Well, let me speak a little bit to the informal channel. So in the informal channel, we have various different supplier categories as well. So we made it a point. If you think about it, just focusing on waste entrepreneurs, the individual waste entrepreneurs, the ones who are the most exploited in the system, right? Focusing on only them and trying to cut out all the middlemen in between is not the solution for us. Yeah, we want to enable the entirety of the system to just act more responsibly, act more transparently, and get the benefit from it, right? Which means informal waste picker can get value from trading with Mr. Green Africa, a medium to a bigger supplier who's an aggregator who has their own cohorts of pickers and waste entrepreneurs do the same, right? It's on the basis of rules of engagement on how we engage with them, right? And so that's 95% of our feedstock. And if we break it down further today, I would say even majority is coming from the medium to larger suppliers, and the minority, 20 to 30%, is coming really from the individual small suppliers, right? But because we're working with the medium and the big, we have an indirect impact also on their small suppliers, right? So we can, if we were to count them as part of our ecosystem and supply system, we would talk about tens of thousands of people that are benefiting from trading with Mr. Green Africa, right? So that's on the informal side, and then on the formal side, we started making an effort to try to tap into a bigger cake of the size of the pie. Because if we still look at numbers today, you know, most of the plastic waste that is being generated in emerging markets, in Kenya as well, is maybe 5 to 10% is being recycled, which is captured by this informal system. So there's still, we can be generous, even let's assume it's 30% that they capture, because there's a dark number there, right? There's still a big chunk that is not being captured. And in our formal system is what we're trying to do is capturing into this untapped system where, you know, consumers are burning waste and with it plastic waste, right? I think is our biggest competition, not other recyclers who are pulling for the same material. It's actually people burning waste, and the value is lost. So we're trying to create a value proposition, and this is something unique we did is 3 years ago, where we started integrating with consumers and enable consumers to come and drop off plastics and earn something from it, right? That is a unique value proposition that we haven't seen in many places yet, unless in Europe with a deposit scheme that is heavily subsidized, right? And how we did it is we have done it under the value of the plastic, right? We're trying to incentivize the consumer system in through different channels, petrol stations, schools, mom and pop stores, community, gated communities, and things like that, where consumers can bring back plastics, have a solution of how to do recycling, and in some instances, even get value for it. Yeah, that's how we see how we're gonna collect. And I think when we fast forward into the future for 20 kt, our ideal mix would be 60% coming from a very transparent, traceable, informal system, and 40% from this formal system.
Yeah. And if we stick to that one, let's say the untapped potential, and you mentioned earlier you're active across the whole country. As far as I know, it's still, like, of course, focused to the metropolitan areas. When I traveled Kenya, I saw many villages where, like, plastics, and even plastics I guess you would wish to recycle, it's just lying around, behind the houses, in the field, in the forest. And I was wondering, does it only come down to logistics and logistic effort to kind of connect the distant upcountry destinations to these kind of systems you're building? Because, I mean, the rest seems to be there. And for me, I was just assuming it's, let's say, logistical effort and the costs associated with bringing these plastics to one of your collection hubs. So what's the barrier
there? Logistic is a big part of it. Absolutely. But I think we're getting more closer and closer. The more dense you operate, the easier it becomes with logistics, right? So there are breakthrough milestones to unlock also the more remote villages, etc. Of course, the further you go from your hub, the more expensive the kilo it is to bring it into your factory, right? So logistics will always be a key piece, but I think there's a lot of logistical knowledge out there. The more we can leverage that and tap into that knowledge, the better we can do it. The other part that is a prevention here is, you know, not only a channel where people can engage with and earn the value where that starts, there's also awareness and there's perception. You know, I mean, I honestly, when we started the consumer ecosystem with the formal journal, I thought people would stand in line to bring in plastics.
Yeah, yeah.
That was not the case, yeah. You know, not yet, at least, you know. That's what we measure success as being like, when people start standing in line to drop off plastics to get value, right? So there's also an inherent perception element, right? This could come from not being aware that there's the value. So not many people know about Mr. Green Africa today, that yet they can get some pocket money for bringing back plastics, right? So the awareness of that, the availability of the solutions that are there, and then the reach, you know, as well. And then, of course, also the subtle societal element, you know, we've seen it's very stigmatized, you know, collecting waste and carrying waste is a stigmatized thing, right? So, as I said, you know, waste entrepreneurs are really, when we call on the food chain, the bottom of the food chain, right? And when it comes income and kind of like societal position, right? And so even if it's a house help who would do a job and who could make that extra income, they might not want to be seen with plastic waste because they're perceived as a waste picker, right? And so stigmatized. I see also there barriers and challenges that one needs to break through to change that perception, right?
Yeah. Yeah, gotcha. And if we now look at your end result, you already mentioned one of the three pillars is the cooperation mm-hmm. with big brands. So what are the kind of products that are made out of your recycled material?
You know, I think we're even scratching the surface on what all the possible applications we can go in. So far, obviously our feedstock is post-consumer packaging, right? And the applications that we've gone into is different. So plastic types. So we've gone into blow molding applications. So, packaging, you know, for detergents, household cleaners, multi-purpose cleaners and things like that. We have not done on the polyolefin side, HDP and PP side. We haven't done any food grade because even the European standard is still yet to be defined. What does food grade really look like? So we're focusing on, you know, applications that are, you know, back into consumer applications, bins, buckets, from a PP perspective and a packaging that is non-food, from HDP perspective. And then now, since this new capacity and capability that we brought online on the PET front, we're now trying to break through the barrier of, food, application as well. So back into the Coca-Cola bottle, Pepsi bottle, soda bottles, water bottles, etc., and other food applications for PET, because we've now brought in a food grade capability into the Kenyan market, which is also again a pioneering move that we do that has not existed before.
Congrats.
And then of course, you know, other non-food applications on the PET side as well, you know, all like a dishwashing liquid soap that is made in PET packaging. So those are typical applications. So mostly consumer packaging again. There is a big chunk of it that cannot, maybe not meets the quality, etc., that can go construction, which is piping. So we have really good product market fit for the piping industry, which they really appreciate, which we created value for, because before they were using virgin, now they can use high quality recyclate as the Europeans are doing today. And so that's where we at. I think it can be expanded. I see a big opportunity in the automotive industry. So getting more into specialty plastics, that also value that allows us to redistribute even more value within the system and make it more viable. So yeah, so that's where I can see it going and heading.
Yeah. And if we take that to a global scale, so currently as of 2025, when we look at Europe or Germany, plastic recyclers are facing huge challenges when it comes to demand, pricing, capacity. So I feel like every week, every month, some facilities are closed down. So how is it for you? I mean, also acknowledging that, of course, in Kenya, let's say labor costs are relatively cheaper. But it's just one part of the cost structure. Yes. So are you, I mean, you're never happy. I know. And it's not about talking prices right now, but how does the situation look like for you, for Kenya, or maybe even supplying into other, even European markets?
You know, from day one, it was clear for us. We cannot charge premium, to Virgin. For our reciprocal. So for all these years, we've always been selling at a slight discount or at par of the Virgin price in Kenya to Kenyan customers. And also our focus, because of our scale, was predominantly domestic regional customers. So rarely did we have export markets, every now and then a container here and there, but nothing significant. Now with this new capacity coming online, we're looking at that more and more. But coming back to your questions, is the key uniqueness that we have been able to break through is that we are at par or below Virgin, right? Which creates a real product market fit and no dependency on regulation or a commitment from a brand owner that can revise and work backwards, etc. It almost becomes a no-brainer, especially for the corporate partners, because we can enable them to achieve their goals at the same cost or even cheaper, right? So that's what helped us. Now, of course, it's worrisome if you look at what is happening on the global scale, and it puts pressure on the business. And the way we have mitigated our risk is we've worked backwards. We've looked at, okay, all the product the products that we're selling into customer base and where we at, the price points that we can get, the margins that we can make from this. Let's work backwards and make the system work within, right? In some instances, like for example, PP, we had to do price reductions on the PP for our suppliers, right? So we have to work in between. So that's how we try to manage and just try to hunker down and push through, scale up, and get to that stability and hold the fort until hopefully regulation starts kicking in and the market can recover and we're going into much better times from a recycling sector perspective. So that's how we're trying to navigate and maneuver. And as I said, like the key piece, what we've seen in terms of success is our ideal customer profiles, more and more working with brand owners where we have a true win-win. We enable them to achieve their targets, their goals, by using our high quality recycled material in their packaging domestically, right? And working that market and working together with such corporate partners is where the success lies and the stability lies until the overall industry has tagged along, right? Because if we're honest, the brand owners, they are the pioneering companies trying to stick to their goals. Of course, societal pressure, and they know what's coming in regulation, so they're there. But other players are not yet there, right? So the top brand owners, the global multinationals, they are taking a pioneer role in trying to make it work with the means they have, while still trying to keep the competitive edge, right? So and that's where we see ourselves for the time being to really play in.
Yeah. Okay. So now let's look ahead. So where do you want to be in 3 years from now?
Well, 3 years from now, I think we're going to definitely further strengthen, obviously, the core here in Kenya. And we probably will have increased our reach, our Eastern African reach, right? As I mentioned, we're only in Kenya today. I could foresee ourselves to be also in Uganda and Tanzania and sort of an Eastern African player, right? More scale. So moving maybe from 20,000 tons to an additional capacity, 30, 40,000 tons annual capacity, somewhere there. So that's really the strategy. And we will start playing around with having a really solid strategy on how we can replicate what we've built here into other regions and into other markets, right? Be it through partnerships, be it through joint ventures, be it through acquisitions, right? So we really will gear up ourselves of like, how do we really replicate this system, right? As I mentioned earlier today in the call, we have the combination of a decentralized collection system that is super transparent and integrated and a state-of-the-art facility as we have it as a European standard, if you will. The combination of the two is where the magic happens. Right. And we believe this combination can be replicated into other emerging market regions. You know, let's look at West Africa, Southern Africa, India, Southeast Asia, Latin America. I think many markets, of course, they have all their different pace and stages. But I think in the core, this is where we could fit in. And so in 3 years from now, we will have a super solid strategy on how we can go and partner with companies and initiatives in these markets who have already done a great deal in this space that we can consolidate and structure a little bit to have a one-stop shop, if you will, for corporate partners who appreciate to, you know, engage with one party to achieve their goals across multiple regions, right? So that's how we're thinking about and where we want to be in 3 years.
Wonderful, Kevin. My last question is exactly about partners. What kind of partners on an international level should reach out to you?
Well, we would love to, as always, interact with more mission-aligned brand owners, big and small brand owners who want to make the switch and use more recycled material in their packaging. So please reach out to us because, you know, you don't only get quality and quantity, you also get traceability and the impact, the social impact behind the material that you get from Mr. Green Africa. And so this mission-aligned thinking, would love to work with more partners on that front.
Brands in Kenya or also beyond?
I see it really in Kenya, East Africa and beyond. So even if there's a European customer who wants to source recycled content with a story, we're there, we can support. And then, of course, you know, in general, recyclers who have capacity, we still haven't learned, we still are in the learning phase. So if there's any recycler out there who would love to collaborate and share knowledge on capacity and how we can utilize capacity and how we can increase quality, etc., we would love to connect and chat.
Kieran, thanks a lot for sharing your story and all the best for scaling up Mr.
Thank
Green
you.
Africa.
Thank you for having us. It was a great pleasure.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of our series on circular entrepreneurship in Kenya. If you want to get the actionable one-pager about this conversation, sign up for the Circularity FM newsletter. You can find it at www.circularity.fm. Let's drive a profitable circular economy. And please don't forget, the most abundant renewable resource is your imagination.
My name is Patrick Hübscher, and this is Circularity FM, the podcast about understanding, building, and managing circular business models.